The whole thing is it's about your emotional connection, like the content, like
Look at you trying to connect with our fans. Look at you.
I'm not trying to kid with it. I'm saying like if the content's gonna be magic, that's like kind of phony. Like I'd rather just,
Money draft.
I didn't get on Magic Twitter for shit posting about Vorthos, you know.
Money draft.
All right,
Why don't we
and
just do a whole
then
episode about Gary Shandling and pretend that's what our podcast always was?
yeah, man. 66.
That's too fucking young.
I mean, that's about the right age to die, but like in today's
Yeah,
terms, like we wouldn't be in this mess if everyone just died at 66, like a gentleman.
money draft.
Another episode of Money Draft. I don't know what episode this is, somewhere in the 50s, because we had to leave one in the gutter. Maybe JR.
I don't know.
Still
I
wants
don't know
me
if
to
it's
edit
in
it.
the gutter. You could just append.
Well, we'll see. We'll
Thing
see.
at
We'll
the
see. JR wants me to edit it. We'll see. We'll see.
It was a
Maybe
concept
it'll be like
episode.
bonus content or
Yeah,
something
it was a
later on.
concept episode where most of the episode was about the free concert at Altamont in December 1969. So.
We did
Did that
talk
not
about it.
go up yet?
No.
No, it's been like three. Like we recorded it like
There's some
three,
dated
four,
ass
two.
references in that now, probably.
Oh, there's so many.
But still correct, you know. But there's no way to turn a passable cast into a mediocre one by letting it age 3 weeks.
We also, on a very rare occasion, we have a guest tonight. One of my good friends and one of the sad boys from Philly, who also happens to like actually be a talented Magic player, got the homie Jack Wang.
How are you doing, scrubs and peasants?
Very solid, very solid. So it's been a while since we've graced you with our vernacular, and I gotta be honest with you. We're not going to talk a lot of magic tonight. I don't think we're going to touch on any spoilers. I think we fight so much about when and how to do spoilers. We're just going to start doing spoilers when the whole set's out. So you can listen to other basic ass podcasts if you want, like week by week reviews
Why
on
would we
shit.
talk about magic cards at all? Fuck it. No spoilers.
Nah, man, whatever, man.
I don't get paid to advertise cards.
They
You don't need to have this
didn't
thing.
give us an exclusive spoiler either, so fuck
Yeah,
them.
and congrats to Brainstorm Brewery. It's like finally.
Yeah.
Thanks, man. We just had to pretend we weren't a finance podcast anymore.
Maybe they'll put Marcel on the fake Community Cup this year, and it'll all come full circle.
Yeah.
That'd be good.
If there's no voting for the Community Cup this year, woo!
What is
Oh, man.
Yeah,
Did
I
his
mean.
cast?
We don't want to be the same basic cast as everyone. It's like, oh, these are the three or four cards that might augment a modern deck. These will be decent standard cards. How decent will they be? You know.
We don't care. That's not what Money Draft is about. It's not about assessing cards for this bullshit children's card game that I don't even play anymore.
I mean, I don't know if that's true. Like, I love the game, but
Ah, shut up,
this
you
is an
fucking
expert.
nerd.
This is like somehow an expert level Magic podcast. So we've all been around the block 20 times, you know, with every set release. And even though I like the flavor of Innistrad, I don't need to. This is my space, you know what I mean? Twitter.
This is MySpace, all right? You're not going to get any fucking very transparent clues on
MoneyDraft. We're not talking about clues.
You're going to get that.
And
you're going to get that low, low, low shit.
If Emrakul is not in the second set, like, I'm just going to rage unfollow everyone on Twitter for, like, shit posting that for 3 months.
Hey, guys, you can see Merit Lane's. You can see Merit Lane's tentacles in the water on that one card, guys.
Yeah, that was funny, like, 3 weeks ago. Maybe 2 weeks ago. Now it's just, like, shit posting.
Hey, guys, Delirium means Tarmogoyf's going to be in the set.
And not even, like, good shit posting, like, our friends, like, Ken and Bruce Lee.
Oh, dude, did you see Ken's vaping shit post? Because it was great. Oh, God. It was spot on. But other than that, because we just said we were going to talk about Magic, and that, of course, caused us to talk a little bit about Magic. I think the first thing that we wanted to jump on was that Patrick Chapin, often discussed Magic pro, recently was a guest host on a podcast, and the topic was AlphaGo, the Google AI that that was created to play Go and beat humans at it.
Yeah, yeah. So he was on the Bayesian Conspiracy podcast, which it was a name that I hadn't seen in years. Elias Udowski, who he used to see frequenting Robin Hanson, the futurist Robin Hanson, who's like the quote-unquote father of prediction markets. And I guess that's how he and Patrick Chapin got hooked up at one point years ago. And also I know like Zvi Malchowitz is into that stuff. But I think that's how Patrick kind of like hooked up with this specific podcast. But it was really interesting because Chapin did like a really good job of like setting the narrative and telling the story of the match and what each thing meant. And basically the computer made a series of inhuman plays, like plays that a human probably wouldn't make. And what happened, I mean, it was trained by observing, you know, thousands and thousands of matches of Go.
The key thing that he mentioned too, that I thought was really interesting, is that when they were giving AlphaGo games to watch, a subset of those were pro games, but they had AlphaGo watch novice Go games and every skill level in between that and expert. So it wasn't just like focused on learning the pro way to think about things. It was focused on learning how humans of all familiarity with the game can observe plays and think of optimal decisions.
Yeah, but I think like so they would basically look at a game state, and there's like a finite number of game states, like a 19 by 19 grid, I guess. And for each game state, they had so many observations that they would have like many, you know, close game states, and they would like, you know, say on average, what did the human player do? So the important thing is like it wasn't a rules-based algorithm, whereas like I think chess is more rules-based. It starts with like you're trying to like exactly model the human decision-making process in terms of like, you know, if this, then that, and then try to do this. Whereas this was just like, just look at a bunch of data and see what happened and then see how successful that was in the eventual outcome of the game, and then just try to work backwards from that at every point in the game with this tremendous processing power where you both have, you can remember every game in history basically. And then you can also do these simulations.
But it was more than that, because like AlphaGo isn't just like a big repository that remembers moves that were made historically in those situations, because it was innovating new shit. And some of the moves looked really crazy to observers. They're like, why would it do that? And then later in the game, when it made sense, everyone's like, that's completely innovative. Like, yeah. No human would have ever thought to do some crazy shit like that. But, like, it was actually planning ahead to such an extent that, like, it predicted what the human was going to do. And if you've never played Go and don't really know how it works, it's a game where you basically can capture your opponent's pieces, but only by completely surrounding them. So you play on the intersections between the lines on the grid, like on the dots. So if the piece doesn't have an empty space or a piece of the same color in any of the four directions, then it's captured. And you basically get territory on the board where you build these shapes where your opponent can't play pieces inside the shapes you make without losing those pieces. And then you count out who's got the most pieces plus the most territory, and that's how you win the game. So it's not like chess where, like, you start with all of your pieces and then they get captured and then you run out of pieces. Goes the opposite. You start with nothing and then you build up your territory and capture their pieces just for points. So it's a little bit of a different game.
Yeah, and they were actually using a specific Chinese Go rule set where almost similar to Modo, where each player has 2 hour clock time, and every time your turn starts, your clock runs down, and then there's a series of, like, if your clock runs out, then you have 1 minute per move, and then I think they're allowed, like, a certain number of overages. Like, if you have, like, 3 bonus minutes, if you want to, like, if you're down to those minute turns, you have, like, 3 of them that can go over. But there's also, in that Chinese version of Go, I think there's also some scoring based on time left. But
yeah, so that's a big thing that Chapin was talking about. He thinks in the next iteration, basically, in the game that Seedahl won by, you know, making his own sort of drastic move that threw the computer off, not unlike the Harlem Globetrotters episode of Gilligan's Island.
What?
Not unlike yeah. that at all.
It was. It was the exact. It was the exact same thing. Island.
Yes.
That's how they beat the robots, because they just did crazy stuff and the robots were like, I don't have enough of this in my database to compare to, so you're starting to lose me. And then the other thing was, like, he was, like, stringing together a long strategy that looked crappy at first, but actually had an end, like, a good endpoint. But to the computer, it just looked like a crappy strategy, so it didn't really see what he was trying to do. So it was like, basically what it came down to, it seemed like the computer just, like, wasn't, it benefited by not being wed to a strategy and a narrative from the start. At every point, it was just like just doing this massive crunching and saying, what's best? What's the best tactic right here? What's the best tactic right here? So on every turn, it just, like, gained a little bit of an advantage. But yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, I don't know, like, applications, like, and then that's the other thing. It's like, first of all,
the applications is that it's the framework for actually building a neural network with computers, as opposed to, like, Deep Blue, which was just raw brute force processing power.
Well, yeah, it's the outcome of neural network and stuff. And, like, I've probably shortchanged neural networks myself. Like, the closest that I've come to using them, just, like, simple algorithms on daily, you know, stock data saying, like, find me, in the history of this stock, find me, like, the top 20 times that looked similar to the past 10 days, and then, like, you know, predict what's going to happen in the next 10 days based on, like, and, you know, what I found there was that it was fine. It worked, but it was reducible to more simple rules. And I said to myself, whatever, all this egghead neural network shit. But I think if I went deeper and just had more time and more processing power, more resources, like, yeah, you probably find something good there in terms of, like, trading stocks and shit.
Of course.
Well, that's what they use in science research for, like, theoretical physics and chemistry. They like, hook up a bunch of GPUs and CPUs together to solve, like, complex math problems to simulate chemical reactions or astronomy.
Yeah.
Oh, it's for everything. They even do, like, computer-based assays for drug interactions to see what molecular shapes are going to interact with the bonding sites and shit like that. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah. I do like simulations, like, and sometimes, like, Monte Carlo simulate, like, sometimes, like, I don't consider myself good at math, and if you ask me a certain question that I should be able to do with, like, closed form, you know, with just, like, symbols and stuff, I'll just say, I'm not sure how to do it. I'm just going to, like, sit down with Excel and do a simulation and approximate the answer. And it's like, amazing how it's, like, it's usually, like, really close to the answer you would get from just a closed form kind of thing.
Yep.
Got them spreadsheets, man. Popping and locking.
So, yeah, there's a timer issue. Yeah, I think that was the main thing to me, just listening to that, was that it just, like, it. I guess chess is a game where the strategy is more important, and you can survey more of the search space or all the search space.
Well, chess is a game that gets easier as you play, and Go is a game that gets harder as you play.
Yeah, I mean, number of pieces and...
With this kind of technology, you know, obviously this is extremely groundbreaking and innovative, and it's obviously not a widespread thing. It's dedicated to this one group at Google with the AlphaGo. But, you know, how do you think that, you know, because people always say, you know, well, you have chess, and then I guess Go was something that was...
Well, they thought it was impossible to get a computer to beat a human at Go.
Yeah, and people say that it... I mean, so nobody would ever say that it's impossible to get a computer to beat a human at poker. Right. Because there's luck. Or magic, because there's luck. But how good could you make that computer? And what... I guess it's especially pertaining to magic. Like, what areas do you think would be easier or harder? Like, based
computer
on
computer would be better at calculating outs. Like, what plays better based on what they could top deck? You know.
Yeah, because
some people are like, oh, like, what can he top deck here that kills me? Like, the computer would be better at knowing who's the beatdown.
Yeah, there was actually a paper written that I discovered a couple hours before the cast, and at first I was like, oh shit, I'm gonna have to read this, but I went through it, and yeah, like, there's, like, they basically simulated, like, did Monte Carlo simulations of, you know, they had some knowledge of the game mechanics, and they had the other player's deck list, and they said, you know, based on my cards in hand and their board state, like, they literally just did, like, Monte Carlo simulations of, like, possible games and played out, like, thousands and thousands of games. And so that's like a big, that was a big difference. I want to reiterate, like, chess, like the chess algorithms that, you know, from the 90s, the Beast Kasparov, they were more rule-based. Like, the programmers were sitting down and, like, kind of putting down their own knowledge.
It was brute force.
Well, by brute force, you mean...
Processing power.
But I still feel like this was still, Go was still brute force. It just, the search space wasn't exhaustible. But the fact that you have 10x the search, like, you're just so beyond your human, you know, adversary. And that's the other thing. There's a timing rule that Chapin was saying next time. So they didn't train AlphaGo to think about how important each decision was and allocate more or less time to that decision. And it would always use the same amount of time. And it could have, like, crushed Seedahl in the one game that it lost just by, like, saying, just by allocating its time more and, like, using less time for each decision, it would have, like, clocked Seedahl. So in the rematch with, I guess, the champion of China, that's, like, the main thing I think that people are talking about, is that they're just going to have this like, new clock management on the, which I think maybe they should change the rules, because, I mean, to me, like, that, it is brute force. It's still brute force.
But it's not rules.
Right, though. It's not rules, exactly, yeah.
And that's what I mean by, it's not, the combination of raw processing power and a hard set of rules is different from the rudimentary concept of computers learning.
Well, you still need a lot of computing power to learn.
Yeah, no, like, it's the processing power, but it's not hard set rules, right? The computer is actually, it's not following a massive if-then tree with a huge processor. It's going through and analyzing a board state and then checking all the possibilities and covering different game, like, past loaded experiences to then figure out what is marginally the best play. And that's something that we talked about before the cast. JR was just hitting on the fact that it wasn't, like, a human is kind of married to a strategy, and that's handicapping it, because this program is just taking millions of strategies and trying to marginally eke value every turn.
Well, isn't that like a program's advantage, right? Because it has so many CPUs, whereas we have we're restricted to our brains, and that program can get more CPUs to like explore more options.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, I think to be fair, they should remove that time constraint on the Chinese rules so that, because I think that, and I was going back to it just being quote unquote brute force, you know. But Chapin was getting into this other, you know, future AI stuff. They just want to like touch on for a minute. And for AI to quote unquote take over general AI, like it would need, like the hard thing is modeling. You know, once you have, you know, there's information availability, you know, the difference between Go and Magic. But then there's also modeling. Like, how do you even model things? Like, how do you model? Like, to move like on to like more concrete examples, I think the hardest thing to do for AI would be to look at a constructed format or look at a card pool and build a constructed deck. Like of the various tasks I can think of, and I kind of started at the end, but you know, you could think of like a rule, and so we're not talking about neural networks right now. We're talking about just like rules based kind of stuff, with certain, where you define how cards are modeled. You can think about an algorithm that could draft a reasonable deck, and it knows about creatures, and it knows about rate, and it knows about creature removal, and it knows a little about evasion and direct damage, and just like, you know, six factors that each card is assigned a score. And it wouldn't be good, but it might be competitive with someone who hasn't drafted that much. And you could probably also, in the paper that I was reading, you're talking about rules to play a game of Magic, and you know, the basic goal of minimizing life and trying to like maximize your throughput by just by rules. Now Cube would be much harder than like a regular draft format, but I think there a neural network would be good. If you had access to like every draft, every cube draft that's ever been on Magic Online, and like numbers, like, you know, this card was in a winning deck X percentage of the time, and these
cards. Plus, you would know what cards were correlated with
it. Exactly. So you would be able to back out. Like, you wouldn't know you're doing Reanimator, but you're like, oh, like cards, you know, 1042 and 799, like those are together sometimes. So like,
if I pick this, I have to take the stuff that was in that deck more often.
Yeah. So
the problem with assigning a computer, especially one that's that powerful, to a standard draft format, is just simply like they'll be able to know what the print run is. Like that computer, like something like as strong as AlphaGo
against itself. Yeah, yeah.
What
it could simulate, it could actually simulate drafts and games against itself. It could generate its own data.
Yeah, like it would literally take nothing for that thing to go through to analyze 10,000 packs and figure out exactly what cards are coming next every time,
like,
and then be able to
also
then once you open your first pack, pretty much like know what the rest of the draft. I mean, this is if you're taking packs out of a box in an order, right? I mean, if you shuffle them up, it's not, you're not really.
Yeah, if the set's mappable, yeah.
The sets are all mappable, right? The algorithm, they can only be so complex. They're not printing. It is not economically efficient for them to print sets at a total random print run. They can't do it. There's always a mappable print run. It just depends on how much money you want to spend to figure out the map.
I mean, online.
But you're right. It is what it is.
Yeah. So I said like all my observations there. Again, like looking at a card pool and building a constructed deck, that seems like a hard modeling problem, you know? Like if you could somehow model like combo decks versus aggro decks versus control decks, and you had like a meta descriptions for cards, but
I mean the programming would be, you know, I would hope that if people were going to devote that time to building an AI that could consistently beat people in Magic and build the best decks, they would just like use 1/10 of that money to make new Magic Online.
I mean, you could model. It's something like that, but like, no, you're not gonna get like you're not gonna get like National Science Foundation funding or like millions of dollars to fund that project. But you know, you're playing a children's card game.
Exactly. But you know, when humans, when we as humans, we are capable of a lot of brilliant shit, and we also make a lot of mistakes, and
sometimes you're just off by an order of magnitude, like
you're off by an order of magnitude, you know, and even sometimes if you run a website that's, you know, known for, you know, statistical accuracies and positive statistical rhetoric, sometimes you can still fail.
Yeah. Sometimes money draft is just Nostradamus all the time, you know.
I know Nate Silver doesn't listen to this podcast, Lick. He doesn't know you burned him.
But yeah,
I'm talking about 538.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, technically, I don't know if it was his work per se, but people still identify him with the website, so... Yeah, I complained about it before that he pushes probabilities out to extremes. So if something should really be a 10%, he'll say it's 1%, and it bit him in the ass in Jason's home state of Michigan.
Well, he was just going by polling data, and they did in Michigan. They did all their polling data by landline. So yeah, no shit.
So, but that's known because I remember him writing about that specific factor in like 2008, 2007. So it's not clear what was so special about it. Was Michigan like the only phone, non-cell phone state? Because it was a real outlier, which I could see it was a reasonable outlier. Like, that's why you don't say that something's a 1% chance, because you don't fucking know. Like, and he was like, oh, this has only happened once before ever in the 80s. It's like, yeah, that's why, like, you don't say 1% when it's a garbage number on its face. Like, something that never happened before happens every week, you know?
That's the truth.
I don't know. This election, it's fucked up.
Yeah.
It's bonkers, man.
And, you know, I'm kind
of... Like, I've never been this pissed off about the primary season. You know, I've never hated people within my own party so much.
Yeah, it's an order of magnitude more pivotal than I think anything in anyone's lifetime.
Yeah, because the choices are so goddamn polarizing,
and that's where it's going. Like in the '90s, everything was great, and
in the '90s, everyone was just cool with just, hey man, the status quo is awesome.
5% real rates. Hotel, like everything goes to the center when things are good. When things get bad, things blow out towards the edges.
Yep,
that's human history, man.
In terms of 538, yeah, like I mean, in terms of prediction markets, he was an order of magnitude off from like so. You know, for Michigan, he had 1%. Sanders prediction markets had 10%, which doesn't sound like a lot, but it's like 10x. It's like rolling, you know, a 100-sided die versus a 10-sided die. And then same thing for what was it?
Yeah, he had less than the margin of error.
Yeah. And
that's really ballsy.
Like, if you're risking your money, you just don't do that. Now, I will say, like, the average of the prediction market price and Nate's, like, 538's price is probably the best price. Out of like, if he just had to do something and like get the best price, he would just like average them. But he and then so he was scrambling after he had that one bad night on the Ides of March, and he had this new demographic model, which he thought explained a lot. And it does; it's like very interesting, the demographic model. And it's funny, like they converge to 40% for Sanders, like both. But well, his demographic model said 40% for Sanders in Ohio, and then the prediction markets also went to 40% for Sanders in Ohio, and they were both wrong. So he got like a little whipsawed there. But there's just like epistemic arrogance. The same thing with like just because like something never happened for 100 years, if you all of a sudden see a reason why something might happen, like that's important.
Oh man.
So, yeah, and like, I just feel like what's happening now is just fucked up. And
yeah,
relative to the six, like the quote unquote turbulent 60s, like, yeah, we're not like sending, we're not drafting people and sending them to war, you know, and soldiers aren't shooting students on campuses, and there's overall like less racism, less sexism, everything like that. But in terms of the structure of society, I think it's way more fucked up. And
yeah, I mean, you got to fucking, there's no, you know,
there's
tons of protests, but there's not that.
In the 60s, there was a solution. Like, if they just said, like, all right, we're going to pull the fuck out of Vietnam, we're going to, you know, go kind of advance more social sort of programs that became popular under Kennedy and Johnson. Johnson, you know, even though he followed through in Vietnam, like his social programs, you know, relative to what they were at the time were, you know, considered good. But yeah, so we talked about weird historical riots a few episodes ago. And I almost mentioned that I had like sort of, it was sort of off the cuff, but I always like, it was always an interesting question. And the fourth one that I didn't mention was the Hard Hat Riot, which occurred in Manhattan in May 1970, a few days after the Kent State shootings. And it's like very bizarre and singular. Basically, like there was a group of protesters near the Stock Exchange on Wall Street protesting the war and protesting the Kent State shootings. And a group of construction workers staged a counter protest and ended up like attacking the younger protesters, basically, you know, construction workers who are working in, you know, surrounding buildings, including, since I noticed like the date with 1970, I was like, oh, those were like the World Trade Center construction workers. But so,
yeah,
I don't even know if, I don't think,
but it was like the protesters were, the protesters were also like as young as high school students.
Yeah. So historically, like it wasn't like no one really even died, but just in terms emblematically, it was just like interesting. And it's not like, it's almost like it was almost a more healthy dynamic, like, because that wouldn't happen now, you know? And that's what I was saying, like in the 60s, you could just kind of fix like the problems they were having by getting out of Vietnam and, you know, relaxing, you know, sort of social laws. But there's no solution now, and that's the profound cynicism with people who support Trump. I feel like part of it is like the system is definitely broken, so let's really fucking break it so that something new will start. Which, yeah, it's
that's
like,
the same exact view that people that support Bernie have, though. It's just less of let's like
broken.
I think the people who support Bernie are much less nihilistic. I think it's more like,
you'd be surprised. You'd be...
Yeah, I think it's more about like just they can feel the inequality which is built up over the years.
Like people are like, oh, what's the worst that Trump could do in 4 years? And it's the worst he could do is very bad.
Yeah, real bad. But
cut that. Fine, I don't care.
I feel like I've said it. That wasn't even a joke. But like when I hear the word suicide, like I'm increasingly just thinking like suicide. Like is part. I think it's almost part of the same thing. It's just like people in the world just have this fucking cynicism where they feel like there's like no, they're never going to retire, as it were. Like there's, you know, and then on top of that, you have, you know, like the, you know, the testosterone and will to power. And I think it's all like, you know, the same. I was joking before that if real interest rates went up, things would calm down a little bit. And I think it's true. I don't think it's bullshit. I think like if world real interest rates went up and everyone felt more wealthy and like more like they were going to be able to retire in X years and not be hopeless, things would calm down a little bit. So I think with like the...
I don't know, man. I don't know. I think you're... without going too far into politics, I think that view is pretty narrow for the dire situations that a lot of people are in, and it's not even about like interest rates. It's about like the next meal, and yeah, I mean, it's not.
Of course,
it's not,
of course, but there's a clear relationship, and I'm not saying there's direct trickle down, but
because there's not.
There's the inequality is a product of the globalization and technology that's gone on since like 1970 and 1980, and workers are just being less competitive. And that was my point with the hard hat riot, was that that doesn't exist now. The young people who are support Bernie and the AFL-CIO, they both support Bernie. Like, that conflict wouldn't happen now, and that's not a good thing, because that just means the system is just totally tilted in one direction and there's no solution. The solution is going to be like massive inflation or something, but the imbalances are so high that with pensions, public pensions, and their assumed rate of returns, like, something has to give. So that's all I was saying.
Yeah, I hear you. Oh, man. Oh, man.
So I don't know if you even want to talk about the next thing that I stuck on the docket.
Is it Batman versus Superman and how fucking bad it is?
The 1977 Hanafi siege.
Which is another thing where, I mean, I knew about the hard hat riot for years, but Hanafi siege, I just learned about it after we talked a little bit about Marion Barry in D.C. And then I didn't realize, he was shot near, ricocheting bullet hit him near the heart in a 1977 attack on a D.C. municipal building by a bunch of...
Can we even count that as being shot?
It lodged near his heart. I mean, I'm just saying. And it, it's Marion Barry.
I mean, if that's getting shot...
It's Marion Barry. Come on.
He shot himself lots of times with heroin.
I thought it was just crack.
That's what he got caught with.
Yeah, I
don't know. So when I was talking to Jack about the Hanafi siege beforehand, and he made a really interesting point about the aftermath. I don't know if you want to.
Yeah, like the aftermath of that shooting. Like, normally you talk about it, right? But like, we did a shooting today. Like, the media will have a field day with that incident.
Yeah. That's part of why I was interested that I didn't hear about it, because it was like a terrorist incident that no one ever talked about. And Marion Barry got shot in a terrorist incident, and like, no one ever talks about that. It's like interesting.
Yeah, it's really weird. Like, to think, like, you know, this is just like a totally, like, today, this attack would be like totally blown up, like every news outlet would dedicate 24/7 coverage to it. And then this was just like, yo, like, some radical motherfuckers, like, rolled into DC, took over a building for 2 days,
killed
a man, and they went to jail.
Yeah. It was like in the 50s when the Puerto Rican National Front shot up Congress. It's just like, yeah, you know, we'll move on. Just more healthy. It's just like the sign of the health.
Yeah, man.
Thick skin. Health.
You gotta get those good spectacles, man.
Oh, yeah. Like my grandfather. I don't know if I'll go, like, too glassy. Like, I have to, like, calibrate my level of glass and thick plastic. But...
Oh, man. Cell phones. Everyone's a journalist now.
Well, I mean, you could break stories. Sure.
You get sued. Oh, man.
That good lawsuit, man.
Yeah, man. Hulk Hogan in a lawsuit with a do-rag on.
He did.
When I saw that number, I was like, that's a big number. I haven't seen many numbers like that in my life.
That good gawker, man. He got him, dude.
I was like, clearly, like, I mean, I was like, they're going to, like, they don't have 115 million, like, no, like, even, like, a, like, any company that's theoretically worth, you know, $250 million doesn't just have $150 million. Like, that's like, you know, their buildings and shit, you know? Like.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what the fuck's going to happen with that, but It was a I didn't think when I heard about the lawsuit, because I only heard about it recently, like while it was going on, and I was just like, oh man, like there's no way the Hulk is gonna beat this fucking clickbait website. And
yeah.
He did.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, it's just Hulk.
Adam, like, brother.
Sketchy guy. I don't know. He's probably
brother. Oh man. So when we were hanging out in JR and I were hanging out in New York recently, we got a little iridescent and we were watching some animal documentaries on Netflix. And we came across one that we wanted to talk about on the cast. And it was about interspecies animal fights, so like fights with like within species. And it got to the giraffe fights, and that shit was lit as fuck, yo. Like, a lot of people have seen giraffes fight, right? And what they do, they got this, like, they got that, like, 6-foot neck.
It's longer than 6 feet.
They get a good, like, almost like a cyclone, like, wind up. You know, they get good momentum going.
Like a highlight play. It's like the...
Yeah, like a highlight. And it's funny because the beer I'm drinking right now is called highlight.
That's not funny.
But yeah, so it's got that, you get that good momentum, and then they take those little fucking nubby horns on the top of their heads and they fucking wail each other with them. Like, just boom. And it's like a thud. Like, you can hear when they have like the cameras and shit, like, and the boom mics, you can hear like the boom.
And it looks like their necks are going to break. Like, even by, like, landing that blow, it looks like they're going to fuck themselves up, but it's not how it works. But
so we were, so during this thing, they profiled a couple giraffe fights, and then they specifically highlighted another one where this one giraffe, like, it was the OG giraffe versus, like, the young buck that was trying to, like, fuck with him. And they got into the scrap, and the young dude is coming at him hard with the swings to the rib cage, to the lower neck where like the key joints are. And then the old dude, me and JR are watching it, and the old dude just winds up, gets that good like triple rotation, that good shit. And then he goes low. And in all the fights we see, we've never seen him go low. He got so low, he was going for the other one's dick.
Yeah, he fucking like lifts him off the ground.
Yeah, he went, he did like a scoop. And like the young bull was like, oh fuck. He didn't know what to expect. The old dude was like, oh, I'm not fucking around. Like, this is just going to end now. Like, we're just
that's
going.
That's alpha go shit, man. You do some unpredictable shit.
Yeah.
I bet a computer would like figure out the best giraffe fight moves.
Yeah. They'll probably just hit him on the back of the neck so he passes out or something. Because that's also a thing.
Oh, man. But the giraffe fights, though.
That was interesting. Like, we also, there was like some other good shit with the slave ants where.
Yeah.
The ant just.
Oh, yeah, with that queen, toxin?
Yeah. She just steals, like, she just, like, kills the queen of a nest of ants and becomes the new queen by, like, first of all,
she like rolls in the corpse,
right? But first she has like a pheromone that just like makes everyone, like every thousand ants in the whole other nest, just calm down and not attack her. And then she gets to the queen and then kills the queen and then just like casually like saws her thorax in half and gets into those juices to get those juices on her. And right around that time, her just, you know, nerve gas on everyone else is wearing off. And they all just, like, come up to her, and they're like, oh, are you our queen? Yeah, that seems fine. And then she's, like, the new queen. It's fucking crazy.
It's great. It was awesome. Like, that shit is crazy. Yo, nature is fucking crazy, yo.
Ants are some gullible motherfuckers, yo.
Yeah. I mean, magic players are gullible motherfuckers, but... I'd rather watch that shit than talk about
good rhetoric. Cheap
clues. Right. Those are some clues right there that you need to be thinking about.
We'll give you your fucking Handwear Chronicles, you pieces of shit. JR probably doesn't even know what that is.
No, I know what that is.
He's proud he doesn't know. Because of the,
as JR would quote it, rampant Twitter shitposting.
Shitposting as a media strategy, man. I don't know.
That is.
Got you talking about it.
16. Oh, man. I'm going to be off Twitter soon, though. It's not why. It's not what I signed up for. I signed up for strategy discussion, the occasional observational anecdote, you know? Another thing that, like, I can't believe I didn't hear about until recently, like, the movie Talk Radio. Do you guys know what that is?
I don't know.
No, that's the one that you had at your crib, though, right?
Yeah, yeah. So it was
telling me about
made by Howard, by Oliver Stone in 1988, and basically was based on this guy, Berg, who was a Denver radio host who was, like, controversial and eventually just got assassinated by neo-Nazis. And also, like, obviously it was, like, half based on Howard Stern, like, in terms of, like, his whole rhetoric and his physicality. And so I never knew about that. Like, I never realized, like, how paranoid Howard Stern must have been, like, for most of his life.
But, oh, yeah. That real fear. That real, real, real fear.
No, it was good. It was, like, very, like, claustrophobic. You know, it was most of the thing was filmed in just, like, one scene where they're, like, in the radio studio for, you know, 2 hours over the course of the radio show, and he's threatening. People will start to, like, call in and threaten.
That good hostility, man.
Yeah, I identify with that. As a radio content producer, I need to...
Yo, JR, you ever get nervous?
Yeah. All the time.
Oh, that's the best. There's a meme that only goes back and forth between me and JR.
The Paul DeLay meme?
Yeah, Paul DeLay.
He was the guy that Action Johnson mentioned on...
Bronson.
Johnson.
That Action Johnson. That was on the Joe Rogan podcast.
Yeah, yeah. He was the guy in the 90s who was, like, after Hulk Hogan. Like, he was, I remember, so, like, when he said the name, I didn't recognize him. But when I saw the picture, I was like, oh, yeah, that guy. Like, I remember just seeing, like, you know, in the drugstore when you're playing video games or buying porn or whatever, you see, like, the bodybuilding magazines, and you're like, oh, yeah, that guy. Like, he has, like, a lot of veins. Like, so many veins that you get nervous just looking at him, you know? Like, that can't be healthy. Like, you look like you might just be about to have a heart attack and die or something.
Yeah, that's that shit, man. It's
Well, I mean, they dehydrated themselves before the shoot, though. So
that's, yeah, like... so that's, like, the main sort of thing that's not even on YouTube, but there was one famous shoot in the early 90s where he had these weird spasms in the middle of a shoot because he was so dehydrated. He just, like, he was, like, doing his poses, and then all of a sudden he was, like, cramping up a little bit, and, like, all of a sudden he was like, oh God, and he just, like, fell down on the stage and was, like, writhing on stage for, you know, a number of minutes until a bunch of guys just came and just, like, you know, kind of dragged him off.
They just drag him off, man.
I'll give him that water.
Too much dehydration, man. It's fucking ridiculous.
You gotta get that good water, man, or you're gonna fuck up.
That's why it's like magic. Like, sometimes, like, the thing that you get into just, like, kills you, you know? You don't realize until it's too late that trying to, like, trying to mine this shit for validation, and all you're doing is, like, having, like, these weird dehydration episodes on stage that people talk about, you know?
You gotta get those gains, man. You gotta get swole.
That's a secret to winning at magic. You gotta stay hydrated.
That's what
you gotta stay hydrated. You gotta eat snacks, man.
You also gotta, like, steer everyone's water bottle, like, hide it.
It's the Jack Wang Pro Tour technique. Stealing your opponent's water bottle and hiding it.
That's not against the rules, man.
It's not against the rules, man.
Don't make me do that, man.
You just got to go under the table with your 2 feet and just, like, you know, just take it with the, you know, your two big toes.
JR's wearing sandals.
I always well, you know, when you're, because I always do that. Like, I just instinctively, like, if I have a drink, I put it under the table near my feet so that there's not a drink on the table. You take advantage of that. So.
Looking ideas here.
Oh, man. So I think that, you know, there's the one thing that we wanted to cover was that a few of us were at a Grand Prix recently, in the heart of the nation that the JR despises oh so much.
Yeah, I can't tell if it's more like a shopping mall or more like a campus, or it's probably like an office park. Probably the best.
I agree with that.
It's an office park with weird streets.
It's not like it's real city. Like, it's parts of it are nice. Like, I was looking at Georgetown on Google. Georgetown looked kind of sweet, but it's not like a real city like Philly or New York. Like, just visually,
It doesn't feel like it because nothing can be taller than the Capitol.
Yeah, and even the Capitol. It's just not impressive, especially since there was, like, construction. And it's even the whole space, like, it seems like it's just not.
Well, that was the whole thing, too. So without, you know, before we get into it, you know, we were, well, one of the things Eve was like, when we walked out to see, like, the historical shit, Eve was just like, yo, like, the Capitol's just, like, totally under construction. Like, the pictures all suck. Like, because there's, like, scaffolding all over it. And I was like, oh, that sucks. Yeah, but, but I guess to start from the very top, so the week before DC, the legendary Eve McRae made his first foray to the East Coast of the United States from Vancouver, and he came to kick it in Philly, and unfortunately, like, my work schedule was, like, kind of trash at the time. Unexpectedly, but we got to hang out a lot in Philly, and Eve got to like walk through. I mean, he walked like basically walked clear across Philly. Just like I was like, yo, man, I got to go to work. And he was like, word. Like, I gave him keys. He was like, I'm just going to go explore. And like, I got back from work. I was like, yo, where'd you go? He was like, oh, like, I walked from your house to the Liberty Bell and back. And I was like, holy shit, dude. It's like,
I mean, I ran that.
Well, fuck, dude. Whatever, man. You and Lil Bing can go run yourselves to sleep. But yeah, so we had a good time in Philly. We had some Philly cheesesteaks, made some homemade cheesesteak tater tots for Eve, which was lit as fuck. And then we geared up to head down to DC. So JR took the train into Philly, and then we all hopped in my whip and went down, and we met up with some of the Sad Boys down there. And then this is kind of where the stories veer, because so Friday night we partied, like, just low-key in the hotel room, and we made probably one of the best impromptu music playlists of all time, which I'm really, really glad that I saved.
It was strong.
It's really strong. Maybe it'll end up in the show notes if I can figure out how to do it. But Jack, who's here with us, actually tryharded the event with two really good friends of the show, Martin Brunet, the Canadian legal representation for the Money Draft podcast, as well as Travis Sowers, otherwise known as the really popular Magic streamer Semulin. So tell me about what you guys did to, because I know you guys practiced ahead of time. So what did, like?
So we didn't actually play much. We just, like, open a bunch of packs on Modo, like, you know, try and build something from it.
So, like, theory crafting?
Yeah, theory crafting. So that, like, that really helped us, because, like, you, like, figure out how to build decks, figure out how, like, separate cards into, like, three piles. So one pile was must plays, like, powerful rares and powerful uncommons. Second pile was, like, playables. And the last pile was, like, unplayables. I feel as though, like, when we figure out, like, what was playable, what was unplayable, what decks were bad, what archetypes were good, that gave us a big advantage over, like, scrubs who, like, just misbuilt their pools.
Yeah, because a lot of it comes down to the pool. Because, yeah, like, we didn't enter the main event, but Eve, JR, and myself did an event Saturday. And, like, the 4 p.m. scrub one. Because it was, like, all the people that got knocked out of the main event after, like, the first couple rounds. Like, oh, enter the 4 p.m. team sealed. So everybody that we played against was salty as fuck. But we'll get there. We'll get there.
But, like, the scrubs are, like, you know, like, I played... My deck was... Our pool wasn't that good, and my deck was pretty trash. But, like, my opponents were awful. Like no amount of, like, skill on their part to, like, help them with their, like, terribly built decks. So, like, we just, like, steamrolled them. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's really interesting, though, that you guys actually sorted based on playability, as opposed to, like, doing the traditional color sort and then multicolor and then, like, trying to
sorted, right? But we also, like, after we sorted colors, we sorted the colors into, like, subsections of, like, playables, unplayables, and, like, must-plays.
Okay.
So, like, practice...
Well, what came first, though? Color first?
Yeah, color first, and then, like, sorting out the playables. That's where practice came in. Well, practicing building. Like, when we first started practicing, it took us, like, 2 or 3 hours to, like, you know, discuss and sort and build, but, like, after, like, you know, after you get through that hump, right, you get to the actual event, like, it only takes, like, 45 minutes or maybe half an hour to do that.
Yeah. That's good. I mean, and you know, so that's day one. So where did you guys end up after day one?
6-3. I want to be 7-2 to, like, qualify for the Pro Tour again, but unfortunately we lost in round 8. So that dream ended, but we finished out strong to finish 6-3. Then we XO'd day 2, which is 5-0.
Mm-hmm.
So that put us in top 32, which gave me, which gave all of us three pro points each and $300 each. Pretty paltry money, which only paid for my weekend, but
it's still worth it. Yeah, the pro points.
Yeah, pro points was, I mean, at least for me, I mean, I was only one on my team that needed pro points, so with 3 pro points and my pro tour appearance at Atlanta, my day two pro tour at Atlanta, I have 7 pro points, so I just need 11 more to make silver.
11 more, that's a tall order, man.
Yeah, man, I just gotta win a GP, man.
So Saturday night got out of hand a little bit.
I don't know any about this, so let's...
So Saturday night... Saturday night we were chilling, and then we did the team sealed, and we grabbed some food.
1-1 drop, man.
The 1-1 drop.
Yeah.
The 1-1 drop. Our opponent, dude, our first round opponent was such a piece of shit. So I lost. So we built, right, and then I misplaced the deck, my deck,
yeah,
of the three. This is the 4 p.m. scrub team sealed. I misplaced my deck. I'm late sitting down, like maybe like 7 minutes or so. And one of the judges had the deck, blah, blah, blah. I was like, yo, it's the one in the fucking Pokemon box with Lannister sleeves, motherfucker. Give me that shit right now. And yeah, so I got the deck back. I sit down and the guy's like, all right, so we're going to start in game 2. And I was like, are you sure? And he's like, yeah, we're going to start in game 2. You're late. And I was like, do you mind if I call a judge? He's like, oh, I'm not, like, trying to, like, try hard you or anything, but, like, you're late. Like, you were late. Like, you got a game loss.
So and I was the like, essence of try hard.
I was like, judge. And the judge was like, oh, yeah, sir, this is not competitive REL at all. I'd be happy to give you a time extension because we had to give your opponent his deck back. And he was already – that tilted him already because I was like, yo, you're not going to fuck me, you old piece of shit. Like, all right, no offense against the elderly, but our
opponents – Was he a fucking old? Was he an old?
Our opponents were a team of older gentlemen, and they were already really salty because apparently they thought that they would do good in the main event. Now they're in the scrub sealed, and the guy that I was playing – was the most salty. Like, I can't speak for the guys that Eve or JR played, but the guy that I played in the round one was a total dick. So he's already tilted. And, like, he's going off, and I'm like, I'm obviously playing the aggro deck.
Yeah.
So I'm like pushing, and he starts to stabilize, and then he just plays a fucking bomb. I don't forget what it was. One of those Eldrazi motherfuckers that's just huge. And I was just like, all right, like active treason. Okay. And man, dude, I swear to God, you could see a vein in his forehead. And he was just like, oh no, it's cool, whatever, you know, pressing a service again. And I was like, dude, like, calm down, bro. You gotta chill the fuck out. Like, because me, like, you know, we're obviously a little turnt, you know, like we went to a bank before we did the 4 p.m. sealed, we did a bottomless mimosa brunch. So and the bottomless mimosa brunch wasn't like the weak ass bottomless mimosa brunch where you gotta like ask the waitress every 3 seconds, like, hey, can you give me a refill, please? They mixed it at the bar and they gave you like a full fucking carafe of it to pour yourself at the table. And when it was like one quarter left, the waitress was like, yo, you guys ready for another one? It was like the best bottomless brunch booze service that I've ever had.
It probably wouldn't have happened if everyone looked like JR. If like there were just like 3 JRs there, it'd be like, get out. Like,
you're scared off all the fucking pussy.
Yeah, man. Eve's like 6'5", fucking 20 some years old. He's younger than me by a couple of years.
Holy shit.
Eve is Motika's age, I think.
That's my age. I'm like 25.
Yeah. Yeah. 1990, right?
91.
91?
Jesus, 91.
Fuck, Jack.
What's wrong, people, man? Who were born in the 90s are allowed to be people. What is the world coming to?
I will. Corbin has a 9 in his handle, right? Or is 88? It's close enough.
Yeah, he's 88.
Corbin's my age.
Really? And he's already got a kid?
Corbin's 29, 27, 28.
He's in Oklahoma.
All these motherfuckers got kids.
That's the other thing that enrages you.
Oklahoma got grandkids. What are you talking about?
Yeah, he does live in the sticks.
Yeah, you're right. Oklahoma.
Said that in the first episode. It should enrages you about this game. Motherfucker's too young. Like, Swedish Kibler, like, he has a 90, he's like Larson 93 or some shit.
Really?
No, Larson is not that young, 93. Larson's
I think so. Look, 26. I think, pretty sure his handle has a 93 in it.
Fuck that photogenic motherfucker.
Fuck his hair, man. I'm sick about hair jokes. I'm sick about Reed Duke jokes. I'm sick about... What?
We can make jokes about Reed Duke's hair because it looks like he cuts it himself.
So they do.
Oh, fuck.
91.
He is Jack's age. Swedish Kibler is 91.
Oh.
That disgusts me.
I know. All that should disgust me. It's like the same stuff we were talking about before. You just have to decide that you're casual. Like, you have to, like, it's like the A-Team episode with Medina.
Yeah.
You know, the religious stuff, some of the sentences that were coming out of his mouth were, like, technically insane, but his conclusions, for the most part, were valid, aside from the porn stuff. But, like, you know, a lot of people are just in this for, they're mining some, you know, ego points, you know, by, like, the number of followers. And, like, I've talked about, like,
Yeah.
Part of the reason everyone's on Twitter, like, it's, you know, it's maybe 60% information and 40% self-promotion, you know, and for some people it's more so than others, but like some people you can tell.
So,
like,
so before JR goes on a full tear, let me go back to the DC weekend.
Yeah, I'm sorry, we're still in the middle.
Does anybody care about that? I wasn't there and I don't care.
I saw that coming a mile away. But The ideal point, so we had been drinking before we did the 4 p.m. sealed. We went 1-1. After we got the one loss, we were like, fuck it. Like, the minor prize we would get isn't worth it. We hung out. We went to go get some more beers. And then we ended up meeting with the rest of the Sad Boys crew.
Minus J-Way.
Minus Jack, because he was try-harding and made day two. But it was, it was me, JR, Eve, Billing, Motika, Chase, and Markowitz, who joined us. Motika wasn't there. No. Sorry. Motika was not there. So it was Markowitz, Chase, and Ling.
Yeah.
And we found this little Asian spot that had some good grub. And then upstairs they had private room karaoke. But the key thing is that at dinner I discovered on the drink menu that they have Mai Tais. And for those of you who don't know about Mai Tais, they're just like Long Islands.
Oh shit.
Except for like blue. So we were drinking Mai Tais, and at this point, you know, like I, as usual, JR and I are the most turn up, and I was sipping Mai Tais, and JR was like, "Yo, let me get a Mai Tai." So we both finish our Mai Tais, and then we go up to the karaoke room, and like within like 3 minutes of being in the karaoke room, JR is fast asleep on the couch. And I'm not talking about like a minor, like I'm talking about like my friend Bill, who is an aggressive, angry motherfucker, screaming System of a Down in a small room in karaoke, and he was just
it's too much.
I agree, System of a Down's boring.
Was it the 9 p.m. peak?
No, this is midnight. This is
9 p.m. peak hour, man.
No, dude, this is like midnight. This is like midnight. Like we. Like,
that's JR's MO, though.
I knew it was going to be a late night. I said it on the cast. I was like, motherfuckers didn't get off the site until 10, which is part of the problem with it. A team GP. It's great if you want to play. It sucks ass if you just want to hang out, because every motherfucker stays as late. It's not like people, you know, drop out after 5 rounds and just go party. Everyone's like, you know, they want to hang out and like see how their, you know, teammates are doing. So it's actually like the worst kind of GP for like a pure hangout. But we were hanging out like all day, right? We had that unlimited mimosa.
Yeah, well, the most notable part is that very rarely, like usually like one of the first things I hear in the morning at a Magic event is that. That good beer opening sound, and I look over and it's JR, and I'm used to that. But Saturday morning when I woke up and I heard the beer opening sound, and I was just assumed, and it was Eve.
Yeah, that was awesome.
He spent too much time with us, man. It was 8:15 in the morning. And I was like, God damn, that is so Money Draft. Like you opened a beer before JR. Holy shit.
Yeah, I was thinking, I was preparing ahead. I knew it was going to be a long day.
Well, we had the sauna going, you know.
Yeah.
That good Money Draft sauna.
That's why I would never do like Airbnb. Like when people, they fuck up your shit. Like even if they don't really mean to, like. They fuck up your shit if they're using it. They'll break shit. You know, like we, you know, the wallpaper might have peeled a little bit in the bathroom for reasons. But
oh, man, that good wallpaper peel.
It was it was a long weekend. I mean,
it was a long. We had to do work.
Yep.
But yeah, so karaoke was fucking great. We did I did Easy Lover with Philip Bailey and Phil Collins with Chase. That was epic. I rapped 6 foot, 7 foot by Lil Wayne in a very drunken state, which was hilarious. Chase fell off a table. Wing was super fucking aggressive.
As usual.
Yeah, and it was just a great fucking night. And then, so I left, or I left before anybody else. I grabbed JR and I was like, yo, we're going back to the hotel. And he woke up and he was like, word. So we walked back to the hotel and bullshitted and then passed out. And then Eve stayed with the Sad Boys and did karaoke for like another hour, I think. And then came back. And not even the next day, but after we were back in Philly, Eve was like, yo, like I got something to show you. And I was like, all right. And He was like, yo, like, I didn't know if you would think this is weird, but like, this is like, I think you'll think it's hilarious. And he was like, so he pulls out his phone. And he's like, this is from Saturday night when I walked back in the hotel room. And it's a pitch black video. You can't see anything, but it sounds like there's construction going on outside. And it's like 2:30 in the morning. And it's just a black video. And it's, Eve is just like, if you can hear this, that's Slick and JR snoring right now. I just got back to the room and it sounds like there's a fucking bulldozer going on. And it's like they're snoring, this cacophonous snoring of JR and I, who are probably having just like awful respiratory systems. It's like,
yeah.
It's just like heinous sounds.
It was probably like, because we were both.
These motherfuckers are snoring so goddamn loud.
It's probably because we were both.
I just started cracking sleeping. The fuck up.
I didn't know that. That's funny. But it was probably because we were both sleeping on our sides to like. But I thought that's make. Like, I think we were both sleeping on our sides so that we wouldn't accidentally touch dicks or anything on the sides of the bed. But I thought that makes you not snore. So I don't know. But it was something like that. I was like totally passed out that night. It was one of those nights where you wake up and you're like, how the fuck did I get here? And I like, yeah.
Well, the quote of the entire weekend was Sunday morning, JR was just like, I only remember the first third of the Mai Tai. that summed up the whole weekend. Right,
the Mai Tai is the thing. It's really embarrassing, but it made me like the Mai Tai. It was like so ridiculous. It made me black
it's
out. It was like,
liquor.
Yeah. But when you say that, it's like, oh, along an aisle, I could take that. But like, it was just enough at that hour.
It's a pint glass.
But it was like with the funny. It was
filled with liquor, and then at the very top, splash with some blue shit.
But it was like the Rosetta Stone of it. You know, it's like I don't remember what happened. It's like the Mai. I was like, oh yeah, the Mai Tai. I remember everything.
So then. Sunday we hung out and went to the site and we fucking like JR left because he had to work Sunday night. And Eve and I actually, you know, I was kind of glad that Eve was there because like normally if I went to DC for a Magic tournament, like the last shit I would ever do would be to like go visit historical monuments. And like go do like the touristy shit. But because Eve had never been to the East Coast of the US or the East Coast at all, I was like, yo, like we should go see this shit. And he wanted to see it, which was awesome. Cause like going to see the Vietnam Memorial and the Washington Monument and like going to see Barry's house, like it was all fucking cool, man. And just being able to hang with Eve and like talk to somebody that's not in the US and you know, just share his experience with visiting here for, you know, the first time on the East Coast and kind of seeing what that's how we live, I guess. Was
you guys didn't go to Ford's Theater?
What?
You guys didn't go to Ford's Theater?
No, we didn't go to Ford's Theater see where Lincoln died.
You could have like gone in there and like vaped in there and like blew a like taking a picture of like his rocking chair where he got shot through the vape smoke. Like that would
Yeah,
that would have been strong.
It would have been good shit, man. So that was DC and then we dipped out relatively early, went to go to the site to say goodbye to Bushard. It's always good seeing the boy Ryan.
Yeah, Ryan, I'm gonna send you that deck list that you were talking about in Brainstorm. The three-player abuse, man. Against bad players with bad decks, it's devastating.
But then, so then after Eve left Philly, he went to go stay in a hostel in New York for a couple of days. And actually got to meet up with JR. You guys went out to go see some comedy?
Yeah, we went to the Cellar. Comedy Cellar, but the other, like the newer locale on 3rd Street, not the original Comedy Cellar, which is like the best comedy place in New York. But we saw some good comics. Hamilton, the he's like a Mormon guy, Hamilton, and he worked clean, but he was actually my favorite.
Ah, fuck clean comedy.
But he was actually my favorite because the best joke of the night was his, like to me, like comedy is just like, I don't know anything about comedy, but to the extent that I'm funny, I think I just like say stuff that I think is like true in my life, and other people think it's funny. And the joke that I liked was he was talking about not having a kid and how all of his ancestors were looking down on him and saying to themselves, like, this fucking guy, this is how it ends with his fucking Starbucks and his fucking shit. Like,
I see why you would think that's funny.
That sounds funny.
But
like, I got nothing against clean comedy if it's actually funny. Like I
focuses too much on the former and not enough of the latter. Like if somebody's an actual good clean comic, you don't even notice that they're a clean comic. Like the people that are like, oh, I'm such a clean comic. Ugh. Those people are the fucking worst.
That's true. Yeah, I didn't notice that.
You watch
at all
Nate Margatze for like an hour, and you're like, that was good. And then you realize that it was clean after the fact. Like anybody that, I don't know, anybody that it's obvious they're clean, right, like they usually suck.
Yeah. Yeah. Like Cosby. But
When I was really young, I saw Sinbad live. And that was clean, and he was fucking hilarious.
Yeah, you think?
Yeah, yeah. I need to go back. I never like
think
engaged.
You think Sinbad like, back in the 90s yeah. was funny.
His stand-up like, was funny.
I need to like watch. Like, I can't even gauge. I need to watch comedy sober for one thing, because I could actually feel like when I saw the comedy with Eve, I was getting bullshit texts from work, and I could feel my mood like directly and how many drinks I had and whatever else. Like I could feel my mood directly like coloring like every incremental comedian, you know, in terms of just my mood and my receptiveness. Like,
did you heckle?
No. It was, but the guy that I like, Hamilton, it was the guy that I heckled the last time. And this time he made a similar joke and I didn't heckle him. So
you better not like heckle a comic if you're at a show with me.
First of all, I didn't heckle him. I was just giving him feedback because he was saying that there's no advantage.
What the fuck?
Comics accept one type of feedback, and that is either laughter or groaning. There is no other type of feedback.
But his premise was like, there's no real advantage to living in New York City. And I was like, you don't have to fucking drive when you're fucked up all the time. You know? But
I'm not proud of you.
That's fine. But the other, I like Marina Franklin. I liked her. But, and again, like her jokes were like more based on just like real life, you know, whereas other comics are like, oh, like what, when you're like on the TSA line and they ask you like, do you pack your own bag? Like, oh no, Ahmed packed my bag for me. You know,
no one does like, that. That was like 80s Carlin.
Or I saw a guy did that joke at, you know,
what, this weekend?
Yeah, with the Eve, we saw that joke. The first guy. Jesus. Yeah, I can find you his name if you want to like just know who all the hacks are.
That's all right. I got enough names in my hack Rolodex.
And he was on like, dude, he was on like Howard Stern. Like, what the fuck? Like, you should get on fucking Howard Stern. Like, you should have.
I'll do that. I'll call up Howard right now.
You'd have like some kind of angle. Like, what was his angle? He's probably like a fucking idiot.
Some people just do this long enough that like,
yeah,
you get participation points. That's what I'm going for. I don't have to be like funny or clever. I can just like just do this forever. And everybody would be like, dude, have you been on Conan yet? And I'm like, no, I haven't. They're like, fuck, just go on Conan. Everybody gets to go on Conan eventually. And then like, that'll be
like,
me.
Even the guys that are alive who used to be on the original Tough Crowd, like they were sort of garbage comics back then, but now it's like, what's like,
are you saying Geraldo was a garbage comic?
No, I'm saying the guys who aren't dead.
Norton?
Like, yeah, a little bit. Like he wasn't as good as Geraldo. He was not as good as Geraldo.
No one was as good as Geraldo because okay. The guy's a fucking genius. He went to Harvard Law School for fuck's sake.
That's what I'm saying. That's what it's about. But who, the other guy, Paul, Nick,
Nick DiPaolo?
He was also in the lower quartile, lower half back then.
Like, yeah, but he's like, Republicans get Jeff Foxworthy, Jeff Dunham, and Nick DiPaolo. That's what they get.
And that's part of the reason why Tough Crowd was canceled on Comedy Central in 2003 on the 11:30 time slot. And the next...
2003 at the 11:30 Eastern time slot.
And yeah, you're not on the Wikipedia at all.
Can you guess what the show that replaced it was?
The Colbert Report.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, that's why.
That's why it was too like pro Bush.
They went from that actual Republican rhetoric to that satirical Republican rhetoric.
Yeah. Tough Crowd was a very good show, but Patrice fucking bullied everybody. That was the problem. He just talked over everyone, and Colin couldn't fucking, he couldn't rein him in. But like, how do you rein in Patrice O'Neill anyway?
Make him die of some disease, I guess.
Yeah, man.
Everybody's fucking dying.
Sometimes he's just gonna not take care of himself.
Sometimes you just have to have sheer disregard for the effects in the long run, and you know. Yeah.
That's what happened to Tracy Morgan. Like, his doctor's like, dude, you're diabetic. Take care of yourself. He's like, I want to eat chicken nuggets. And then he just did what he wanted. And then, bam, he got hit by a limo. Like, or hit by a fucking delivery truck. So, like, yeah.
My bad thing is...
take care of yourself or you end up hurt, man.
My bad thing is Mountain Dew. Like, it's embarrassing, but I actually, like, really like Mountain Dew. Like...
What?
My dog died of diabetes.
Dude, yeah.
You should be
That's a real loss. Fife, man. That sucks.
But I just justify, like, every time I go, you know, get my physical, sugar stuff seems fine.
I never half step because I'm not a half stepper. Drink a lot of soda, so they call me Dr. Pepper.
That's some
action
there.
That's Fife, man.
That was prophetic.
They were, Tribe Called Quest was an instrumental force in sculpting the music that we have today. So, yeah, man.
Yeah.
You know, you just gotta sometimes you just gotta let go.
Treat yourself.
Exactly. Oh, and then only sometimes you'll feel like dying.
Did I mention, there was something else on the side docket that I discovered today while researching the Hard Hat Riot. The World Trade Center, 60 people died in the construction of the World Trade Center, which makes it, percentage-wise, the most deadly construction project in terms of towers ever. Like, it's 15x as deadly as the Empire State Building. It's like 10x as deadly as the Eiffel Tower, which was like...
Are you counting all the 9/11 deaths?
No. Construction deaths.
Like, dude, you tell me there's not a...
Like,
come
it was
on.
Bad
you tell me the... every tower in Dubai, they just don't build it on a pyramid of human corpses?
Well, they could be suppressing
there's,
it. Could
there,
be
yeah, of course they're suppressing it. They're like, no, only 3 people died. And like 250 migrants.
This might be fair commentary. I mean, all of us are... of course, waiting for the day in the future when global warming makes it such that, you know, the buildings that were built on oil riches are uninhabitable due to global warming, you know, because they're so tall and they're in the middle of a desert. There's no way to even, like, the energy that it would take to cool the building is just not worth, you just abandon the tallest building on Earth. Like, that's going to be sweet in, like, 50 years maybe, but... Yeah, I forgot what I was saying.
Yeah, it's that part of the show.
Yeah.
It's that part of the show, man. Just gotta wrap it up, man.
Should have wrapped it up like an hour ago, and I just could have left because you didn't need me for the last hour.
No, man, you got in on some of that comedy shit.
You could have done that earlier, and I could have left and gone fucking try to get some stage time.
You should,
fuckers.
Like, no, we didn't talk shit.
I feel like now that you have less stage time, though, like, you should bring more of your comedy shit on the show, kind of thing.
I don't have less stage time. I just get out of town less.
Oh.
I got up fucking 4 times this week already, and I could still get up for Friday and Sunday.
I thought you were using that, like you had like some rhetoric where you were like, had less time because he had a baby.
Yeah, I thought that would happen, and then I just, like, every time my wife gets home, I just hand her the baby. I'm like, I need to get the fuck out of this house.
Yeah. I think, like, babies are, like, better than two-year-olds. That, like, in my experience with people, like...
Oh, yeah.
That might get worse.
She can't get into anything. Like, she cries right all the time, and I gotta, like, pay attention right to her.
They're sort of like they're sort of like an object in the corner of the room where as long as they're not, like, actively dying, they're fine. Whereas, like,
yeah, but, like, if your baby's quiet, you're like, fuck, yeah, the baby's quiet. But if your two-year-old's quiet, you're like, oh, shit, my fucking two-year-old's quiet. Right. Plus, and then you got to find out, like, what they're fucking up.
It's going to just, like, get into shit, you know? Like, where's a baby that's sitting there in a crib or, like, a, you know, little carry-around thing? Like, they're not going to get into shit. Like, they're either, like, dying or not dying or sleeping or crying. And they're just, like, they're
dying or not dying
in their object. And it's
the two
fine
states of babies, dying or not dying. Babies passively dying, but not actively dying. Like, everybody's passively dying. But, like, as long as it's not actively dying.
Right. Whereas when they're, like, two, then it's, like, they're eight, like, they have too much power, you know, to go around and go into, different rooms and open different compartments and see things and, like, realize things. It's too much.
I don't want to have to explain to my daughter what a butt plug is because she got into some shit.
Right, I know.
Well, how long?
You don't want to have, like...
I don't even use them. I just collect them, but, like, I still got to explain what it's for.
Like that.
Daddy collects butt plugs, but they've never been in Daddy's ass. Don't worry about it. Like, it's just a thing Daddy collects. And she's like, well, what are they for? I'm like, it's called a butt plug, you idiot. I can't believe you're my kid if you need to ask that.
What?
Like, literally, like,
I don't even want to have it. This conversation sounds annoying. I don't want to have it.
Jack Wang totally baffled at what happens after Money Draft ends.
But this isn't on the cast.
Oh yeah, it's gonna be in
there.
Talking
about,
I'll be in the beginning
about, like, events, and now you're on butt plugs.
But
what is this, heavy meta?
When I was young,
it's like heavy meta but good.
When I was like 7 or 8, I found one of my dad's porno mags, and I stole it. And, like, I don't know, 2-3 months later, my mom was like, did you find, like, any magazines?
Is that what happened? You find one of your dad's porno mags,
yeah,
and the chicks all had big bushes, and you're like, that's what I like forever now.
Yep.
I bet that's what happened.
Wait, are you saying that, like, the story is that you found one of your dad's porno mags, but it was actually your mom's?
No, it was my dad. Well, it may have been my mom's, to be honest. Like, I don't know. That's a
That'd
good
be
question.
A better story.
But it was, and it was actually like 2 or 3. That I would,
I feel
like.
Why would she ask you about? Like, why wouldn't your pops just be like, "Yo, like, you find my porno mags? You fuck,
you fucking kid."
Yeah, that's interesting.
That's what my dad would have said.
I mean,
that's some generation shit. Because, like, I found my dad's porno vids, but not his mags.
Yeah.
I mean, to be honest, like, I knew at the time my mom was probably masturbating with him either way. But yeah, it was kind of weird. You said something that made me think about that. I don't remember what it was.
I remember I found my dad's porn. My dad had porn VHSs.
That's what I found.
And they were the most, like, overproduced, like, 90s pornos that were just, like, off, and there were like two VHS tapes that were, like, behind his gun safe, and I was like, oh man, this is, like, easy pickings.
Yeah, this next generation, like, they're not gonna find my porn. That's a rite of passage. Like, no one's gonna find their parents' porn anymore.
Yeah.
Well, on the computer they will, but that was
Oh, they'll find their own porn. That's the thing; they'll find their own porn.
Sure, but they can still find their.
My dad, like, I vividly remember, like late 2011, early 2012, like, when I told my dad what incognito browsing was. Like, the look on his face was like, "What?"
I mean,
I was like, "Yeah, man, it's the future." I was like,
Channel 53, the Playboy Channel, like. That was the deal. Whenever my parents went out at night, went to Foxwoods, I was on that fucking Playboy channel. had my own VHS tape, like was recording shit. You had Electric Blue. I don't know who had many listeners of the cast, like remember Playboy Channel in the 80s.
Nobody
but...
watched the fucking Playboy Channel.
Well, it was like the only porno channel on the fucking cable in the 80s. Like, I was like always like sitting there like looking at the window because I wasn't sure what time they were going to come home. And I was like recording shit. And I was always like, and it's like, so, like there were like some close calls where like, oh shit, the headlights, I need to like duck out and like change the channel. Like you didn't want to leave it on channel 53 was a thing. Like
that's some rookie shit.
Right. You need to leave it on just like a normal channel, like 3 or 4 or whatever. So
we used to try to see tits on scrambled porn on channel 99.
Oh yeah. In Philly, when I was in college living near Slick, like there was a like it was black and white, but
get it together, Justin.
It was, you could jerk off to that because
you
had the sound.
Get it together, fam.
If you didn't have the sound, you couldn't jerk off to it, but it was good enough.
Let's go. Yeah. Fuck the back talk. Save all that pussy shit for the catwalk. Now write your name 100 times on the blackboard. Just a white man excelling in a black sport. Like a Pistol Pete. You already know you a goner when I kiss your cheek. Lift your feet like when your sister sweeps. Fine dine and drink water out the Crystal Creek. Straight from Queens, rocking leathers like a Mr. Cheeks. Fly shit. Grown man shit. Through my time, fuck it. Good to go. Alright. Yo, I'm a wild freak. Here's shorty with a child sleep. While her mother makes soup with the cow feet. Shoulder pads and the leather, Beau Brummel. Hopping out the limo at the old tunnel. Fuck sex on the beach. I want head in the streets, rent bed on the feet. Lead on your cheek, the Cadillac from 73. Aquamarine with a Bobby Lafine. Big Bird, Farrington alumnus. Mouth like a pussy, she gummed it.
What I want with this Morte wearing motherfucker trying to front. There's a girl that's been on.
Supplies. You see me in the green velour, facial conquistador. Then I order up a feast for 4. If you see me in the leather, know it's reaching the floor. Linen flapping in the wind cause of the breezy shore. Yeah, spinal tap, you spitting gynecology rap. Eat your pussy with a plastic bag covering that. Brothers a clap, leave you hover a jack. If there's chicken in the building, know I'm smothering that. This tool I got will loosen up your stool a lot. Yeah, the PP will make you poo poo a lot. In the Z3 bumper, you too.
With his big motherfucking body, bitch.
Ginger ale, laying in the Knicks cup. Pay $30 for a dick suck. Pay $100 for the joints I roll. Oyster bowls, chilling in the cloisters. I love black girls boisterous. Shorties on the arm like a koi fish. On a Herbie White dude with the yellow fever. Yellow sneakers, see through yellow beeper.
She calls out to the man on the street. Sir, can you help me?
Banging 7 gram rocks and finishing them because that's how I roll. I have one speed, I have one gear. Uh-huh.
Feel the beat.
Go.
When our eyes first met was like the 4th day in July. When you kissed my lips, I knew one day you'd be. Watch my shorty take a shower. I want the good loving. 6 ducks in a wood burning oven. Georgia Southern, her alma mater. She raised out in Queens, but moved out to Colorado. Looney Tunes, Taz on the shirt. Fuck swag, got pizzazz. 2 Jack, Cincinnati Zubaz. Do-rag, Bay Terrace who pass. Taught the skip, school me on the ponies. Next year, Cassie posing at the Tonys. Fold the paper, wildin' at the OTB. Grow the money like a kosher shrimp. American flags hang on walls that hide money. Put my arm through the Picasso. Kevin Fortune's crib got the Tex-Mex motif. Wolves howling. 2 stallions pull the buggy. Clydesdale, crack the bud. Guzzle, humidors. Uncle Moosey with the Mitsubishi. Uncle Jimmy with the funny money. Flossing out in AC. Randy Quaid with the turtleneck. Irma with the jungle juice. Man feet, beam of tan seats. Smack the taco out your mouth. Green couch.
It's just a different. Is it more? I mean, I pay like $17 a month.
No, what? It should be.
You pay $17 a month for Netflix? I pay $7. Are you getting DVDs?
Yeah.
Money draft.
I haven't been impressed with Firefox. Explorer was just the thing that came by default, so I was like, okay, that'll be my porn browser, which is probably...
Why don't you just browse incognito? What are you thinking?
It's more of a matter of, like, diversifying, like, spyware.
Money draft.
This episode was not good.
What you think?
It was lacking in content, I think.
Why do you think it... You don't get to say shit! Why do you think it wasn't good, Jason?
Is this what people want, you think?